Meet the new boss of the House Democrats. Same as the old boss of the Democrats. From America's election headquarters, I'm Dana Perino.
Oh, and I'm Chris Starwalt.
I love how you always forget.
I'm always surprised that I'm on a show with you.
And this is Perino and Starwalt. I'll tell you what. I kind of, now that we don't have fake TV or real TV on Sundays, right. I kind of miss you. I don't know what you're thinking about. I don't even know what you're eating.
You know what I'm eating because you asked me on Twitter. But the thing about missing me is it doesn't last long because then you're like, I remember him. It's okay.
No, that's not true.
I'm good.
That was fun, fake TV.
That was great fun, and I thought it was a show that I was proud to be part of. I'd be proud to do anything with you, but I was proud of the product, and I thought it was also reflective of our values and in a difficult season. And I want to just say that I think that my country came through with considerable aplomb through a difficult time in 2016. And yes, there were protests, and yes, there's been this, and people are mad and went to go see the therapist and had a hard time and all that stuff. But by and large, I think people have come through with considerable aplomb, and I'm proud of them.
Well, that's so nice. Let me ask you, though, first about Thanksgiving. Did you make that Brussels sprouts thing?
Oh, I did.
Well, how'd it go over?
I mean, it tastes like you can feel your arteries harden as you eat it. It is so good. But my thing about Thanksgiving, other than embracing the food of my people with mid-century food of white North Americans, is that I love dressing and stuffing, and I love
it's just really bread with gravy.
Well, no, it's not bread with gravy, Dana. Mm.
So okay.
You have to make the broth. You have to make stock with the giblets so that you can...
Actually, you really don't have to do any of that.
You must or otherwise...
No, you just put it on stovetop.
No. And yeah. I'm sure you did not eat stovetop stuffing for your Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
No, you did not. Yours probably had... There was probably a slight garnish of something that was artisanal and there was something in there. It was probably fantastic. But I like the Pepperidge Farm and it's got to have the giblet... broth in it, and then it's got to be I like some of it in the bird, some of it out the bird, but I was eating stuffing until last night. I had what
I made a lot
because I'm again, like, I love the stuffing so very much, and I ate it the whole time, and I even made stuffing balls.
Do you fry them?
Yeah, I thought about it. If I would have had the energy, I was like, I'm going to deep fry these. And then I stopped myself. I checked myself before I wrecked myself, and I just toasted them off in the oven.
And was that the highlight of the Thanksgiving?
I would say that was a
stuffing?
Low light. I would say that was like a moment of personal shame. But whatever, we can look at. There's a lot of different ways to look at eating.
And in which town did you have Thanksgiving?
In Virginia.
Hmm.
Plain Virginia. My children refer to it as Plain Virginia.
I was here in Manhattan, and I went to the parade.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, that's right.
I sat down at the marquee and watched everything. I felt like I saw all that I needed to see about Broadway in 3 hours.
And you sent me a video of the Pride of West Virginia, the West
yes.
Virginia University Mountaineer Marching Band.
They were the first. They kicked it off.
Because they're the best.
Is that why?
Yes.
I wondered something. Those marching bands are amazing. Marching band kids are awesome. They never get into any trouble.
Right.
They are super responsible, get
right.
up early in the morning. They get none of the glory unless they like go to the big,
right.
the big show.
And even there, they have to wear the hats.
They have to wear the hat. And actually, Peter, my husband, for you know who Peter is, but
yes.
for the listeners, he kept saying, like, why do they have to wear these outfits? I'm like, because if you're looking at it from a TV perspective, it gives it flair.
No. It's a derivation of abstinence-only sex education. That's why they wear the uniforms.
But how do these schools afford to send everybody to New York? It's a lot of people, hundreds of people.
Can I tell you a story about the most important conversation I ever had about politics?
Mm-hmm.
In 2004, I was dumber than I am now, and I was going around Ohio talking to voters who, if you will recall, Ohio was tilted on the razor's edge in George W. Bush's reelection.
Oh, yeah. And we waited many hours.
And you would talk about at the heart of it all, it was. And so I was doing that thing where you go around and talk to real human beings, whatever. Don't we just get polling data? But going and talking to real human beings about their concerns. And I was in the community of Colerain, Ohio, and I was, ma'am, would you mind talking to me about the election? And I sort of wheedled it out of her. And I ended up in her home. and she talked to me about, I said, well, there's Bush and the Rock and the Kerry, blah, 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 blah. And she had a on her kitchen table, she had stacks of papers. And she said, what I want to know is who's going to help me with this. And the this was that her daughter had been accepted for traveling regional band, mm-hmm. a high honor. Mm-hmm. But the uniform cost $400.
Ooh.
This is a family that had already given mm-hmm. up vacation. Mm-hmm. This is a family that her van obviously yeah. needed to be fixed. And she said, which one of these people is going to help me come up with $400 so that I can pay for my daughter to be part of this? Because we're going to do it. And here's this family that has put so much, so many hours, so much effort. And that $400 is now standing between her and the next thing. And, of course, the next thing being after that, you can get a scholarship. If you're in the marching band in high school and you're regional, you can get a scholarship. This girl could have gone to Ohio State maybe to dot the I. No, that's what they do. They do the script Ohio, and somebody comes out and dots the I. But this meant everything for her. And that was the moment where everything telescoped into view for me about how politics works.
That's interesting. I read something about, I think it was in the Boston Globe, and it was a piece about undecided voters. And this woman had, I think she was a reporter, but maybe also a business owner, who had gone around and she had followed undecided voters for a while. And one of the quotes that stuck with me was somebody who at the last minute decided to vote for Trump. And he said, it just feels good to be understood for once. Mm. Even if he doesn't do all the things he says he's going to do, at least like for a season, we felt like somebody understood us.
So
that's interesting.
I think that is interesting. Something I was wrong about was James Comey. So polls reflected very little change as a result of James Comey. And there was an effect that could be measured in voter intensity as he seesawed back and forth between damning and praising Hillary Clinton. And it didn't seem like it added up to much. Well, it added up to something really big. What we saw throughout the course of the election was whichever candidate was getting the most attention was doing worse.
Right.
The more they saw either of these candidates, the less they liked
them.
Yeah,
if you were leading the news, that was not good.
It was not good to be the lead story. He made her the lead story.
Yep.
And he made her the lead story for the closing 2 weeks of the election. Donald Trump, on October 23rd, I believe it was, gave his what I call the Gettysburg redress.
Yep. Redress of grievances.
Redress of grievances about his accusers of sexual assault.
Yeah.
But then gave the speech that they wrote for him. That was the last we heard of that Trump. We didn't hear about redress of grievances Trump anymore after that, really. We just heard teleprompter Trump. Meantime, soon thereafter, we have Comey and Hillary, and Hillary's in the news and serve this and back and forth, and all the news is about her. In the universe of the almost 1 in 5 voters, I want you to think about this. Almost 1 in 5 voters in exit polls said that they disapproved of both candidates. They had negative opinions of both candidates. And you want to talk about swing voters. Those are the swing voters. Of those, Donald Trump beat Hillary Clinton by more than 15 points.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that the reason that those late deciders and the reason that those who held both candidates in contempt or near contempt, the reason is that in the closing weeks of the campaign, the discussion was all about Hillary Clinton and what was wrong with her.
Indeed. Can I ask you what's wrong with her now, or at least her team and the recount?
Oh, fiddle-dee-dee. Why can't they have a recount?
Do you want them to have a recount?
I don't care if they have a recount. They can do it in a straw hat and a garter. I don't care. It doesn't cost me anything. It doesn't affect the outcome. This is not contesting the result, right? No one in Hillary Clinton's campaign is saying she won.
No.
Jill Stein. So it would be sort of like I made this analogy to somebody else, which is if somebody orders a pizza, and you probably once ate pizza.
It is on my list of forbidden foods.
I'm sure. But when you ate pizza.
Mm-hmm. I loved it.
It's so good. You know why? Because it's so good.
So good.
That if somebody's getting a pizza, if somebody said, do you want to order a pizza? you'd say, nah, I don't really want to get it. I don't want pizza. But then later, when the pizza showed up, guess what? You're like, well, I guess I mean, I'd have a slice if you
right.
have extra.
If it's the only thing going.
If it's here, I guess I'd eat some. So that's how the recount, the Wisconsin recount that Jill Stein was doing the recount anyway. And Hillary Clinton's lawyer said, well, if you're doing it anyway, we'd like to be present so that we can have a say in how it's conducted just in case it could benefit us. But it wouldn't be enough to flip Wisconsin. You'd also have to flip Pennsylvania and Michigan. And in Pennsylvania, they missed the deadline. And by the way, they'd have to flip 28,000 votes, I think, in Pennsylvania. These are not small numbers. Hillary Clinton lost Pennsylvania by 1.1 points. These aren't the tiny right. margins of Wisconsin and Michigan. Pretty stout margin.
What do you think about the recount down in North Carolina, though, for the governor's race? I think the Republican incumbent needs to give it up.
Well,
am I wrong?
I mean, it's not that you're wrong. You know,
good answer.
To think back to 2000, there was a theme that in this period, 16 years ago, amazing as it is to think that that was 16 years ago, but at this time, 16 years ago, the narrative had emerged. Well, one of these two men has to step aside for the good of the country. And say, well, yeah, but George W. Bush can't step aside and make Al Gore president. George, right. The person who has the electoral votes gets to be president. There's not a way even if George W. Bush had said, daggone, you know, I'm actually sorry I even ran. Al Gore, you invented the internet. You should be president. I love you. You go for it, man. If that's what he had said, he couldn't have made Al Gore president. And part of the thing about recounts and all of this stuff goes, the concession of a candidate means nothing. You conceding doesn't mean anything. You just have to count. You just have to get to the end. I don't know how long the process is going to take in North Carolina. I know that statewide they got to be done by the 13th to meet the rules, to meet the requirements of the Electoral College. So, I mean, you know, you count until you're done.
And talking about done, I'm just mm-hmm. kidding. I'm trying to think of a good transition. But I also am trying to be kind. The
Stand
Democrats
by.
Today
oh, woof.
Had their
don't bother being kind. That's woof.
Had their leadership meeting, and you and I are going to talk about this on the Kelly File as well. I don't know if you knew that. That's our topic.
I'd heard.
What do you make of the Democrats giving Pelosi another go of it? I mean, are they learning any of the lessons that needed to be learned after the election?
So 2 years ago, it was assumed as a statement of absolute unimpeachable fact that the Republican Party was so ideologically narrow and strictured that it would be hard for the Republicans to nominate anybody but, say, Ted Cruz. And the whole question was, how can you get inside the very, very ideologically narrow space of the Republican Party because it's all litmus tests and it's all so narrow? And then the Republicans were like, psych, whatever. Mm-hmm. Let's borrow and spend $1 trillion. See you mm-hmm. later. And as it turns out, the Republican Party was not that ideologically stifled or blinkered, and that, in fact, they took a big wide turn to the left or to the center with Donald Trump. So, okay. The Democratic Party, on the other hand, has a base that is so narrow. It's tall. It's very tall, but it is so narrow that it is quite unsteady right now. Nancy Pelosi should be the leader of the Democratic Party. She reflects the Democratic Party. She is from San Francisco. She is super liberal. And that is a reflection of what's going on in the Democratic Party. Tim Ryan, the guy who was running against her from Youngstown, Ohio, looks nothing like the Democratic Party. He's from a Rust Belt. He's from a red state, or a state that went red by a considerable margin in this cycle. His district went for Trump. His county didn't, but his district did.
Yeah, and she tried to use that against him.
Right, and it's like
you can't even deliver.
Right, Barack Obama won Paul Ryan's district. These are things that you want, right? This is something that, as a party, you're looking for. Can you sell in enemy territory? Are you saleable in places where the party can't otherwise do well? So Pelosi is a much better representative of the Democratic Party today than Tim Ryan is, and that's a problem. That's trouble for the Democratic Party. They believe in time, and we've talked about Rui Teixeira's book, The Emerging Democratic Majority, the absolute dogmatic belief the demographic trend will lift the Democrats into majority, whatever they do. You know, I called it the Ron Popeil set it and forget it, demographic rotisserie roaster, that it's just going to carry them in. And so they can ignore all these people in Mahoning County, Ohio, and in Trumbull County, Ohio. And they can just reject these people. The idea is that you just wait, and as the Hispanic community grows and grows and those numbers grow and white people die out, that Democrats will be the majority party and you don't have to do anything. I would caution them that if the Democrats can't find a way to win elections without Barack Obama, because whatever people think about Barack Obama, he was good at talking to people from Trumbull County, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
He was good at talking to people from Genesee County, Michigan. Voters there liked him. They responded to him. His message of economic populism, his attitude, all of this stuff. He campaigned there. He knew how to talk to these voters. If they can't win without him, then by the time the demography gets to the point that is going to make it right for them, they're not going to be an attractive party.
But what do you make of Barack Obama saying to Rolling Stone magazine that the reason that they've lost seats all across the country is because of Fox News being on in the bars and diners?
Well, I think he's right in a sense. I think he's right in a sense that if you had the media world that you had prior to 1996, it'd have been a lot easier for Democrats.
Yeah.
I take it as a compliment in this sense, which is in the news division at the Fox News Channel, fair, aggressive, adversarial, sometimes contentious, but real coverage, right? Big boy pants coverage of his presidency. When mistakes have been made, they've been owned up to. But we've covered it.
Yeah, maybe he should have watched a little bit more and been like, oh, shoot, people are mad about Obamacare.
Right. Or that's right. Watch Special Report. Check it out. See what you think. Tune in. Catch an episode of The Five. See what you thought. And see what's going on. Or watch I'll Tell You What. That would have really changed his perspective if he had watched I'll Tell You What. But I think it is easy. We have this thing, this discussion that's going on now about fake news, right?
Mm-hmm.
And people are saying, well, fake news is news that I disagree. Fake news has been now shorthanded to news with which I disagree.
That's not what fake news is.
That's not what fake news is. And Democrats say, oh, Fox, that's fake news. And Republicans say, oh, Washington Post, that's fake news. And people got to go easy on this stuff. You got to have a broad and varied diet. You don't want to just have sunflower seeds in your trail mix. You got to have more. You got to have some M&Ms. You got to have some of those dried banana chips.
Do you eat dried bananas?
I mean, if I'm eating trail mix, I've already sacrificed a lot of dignity. I suppose I can eat a banana chip. But
carob chip?
Oh, gross.
Why?
Carob
chip? It's
like
chocolate.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that what it's like?
Yes.
It's like the cruel mockery of chocolate. It's like an insult. You're like, carob.
Coconut flakes?
I like coconut flakes. I do like that. And I love dried pineapple. But for Democrats and Republicans alike, vary your consumption of news and of sources to get different points of view. If you're in a stovepipe and all you get is the same thing over and over and over again, you're not going to engage in critical thinking. You're not going to sharpen your attitudes. You know what I listen to on the way to work?
Morning Joe. NPR?
Yes, NPR. Morning Joe. My God.
Well, I wasn't sure.
NPR. It's good.
Yeah.
It's fresh.
They have a lot of podcasts.
They have a lot of podcasts that are almost as good as this one. I love the Freakonomics podcast that WNYW does.
Have you ever listened to the Kick-Ass podcast?
I don't know. It sounds kind of dirty.
Oh, yeah. No. It's Ben Mathis. He's a big fan of ours.
Well,
I did an interview with him when I was at the Reagan Library, and it's a good podcast. It reaches a lot of people.
Well. whatever. Why are you hyping somebody else's game? We just got
it's
our little...
Because in podcast world, it's mutual.
Oh, it's mutual?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Everybody loves each other. It's a happy place.
Then I want the kick-ass podcast to kick ass. But you should vary your diet. You should diversify your bonds. You shouldn't just be betting on one thing because you want to have different points of view. I think the president, what he's trying to say is that there was fake news or misinformation out there. I think the truth is that he would have been that the people in the bars and restaurants that he's talking about probably should have varied news diets themselves, but so should the president.
Speaking of that, the president-elect has a varied diet. He ate last night at a very fancy restaurant with
at his hotel.
Former GOP nominee candidate Mitt Romney.
Mm-hmm.
And they had frog's legs, which you said that you like.
Yeah. And you, what I couldn't get to the bottom of, have you ever eaten a frog's leg?
I have not.
So here's the thing. You got to take the tendon out of the frog's leg.
Yep.
Or when you're frying it, it'll jump.
Really?
Because it'll seize up on you and it'll...
Even if it's dead?
Yeah. It'll jump right out of the pan.
Oh, sounds delightful.
And that's something that after you... So I take it that if you've never eaten a frog's leg, you've never gigged a frog.
I've never gigged a frog.
And when you go frog gigging, which is fun, and delightfully squishy, nasty work, and then you cook those frog's legs, nothing a father would like better in the world than to terrify his children as the legs come jumping out of the pan.
Last night at that dinner, I noticed Mitt Romney and Donald Trump, who both don't drink alcohol,
mm-hmm.
were having water, and Reince Priebus had a glass of wine. I thought I would have needed three of those.
Right.
To get through
keep
dinner.
Them coming.
Gutfeld said that dinners like that is what alcohol was made for.
Well, I credit both of them for doing it. I credit Romney for being a game bird and coming out and saying nice things about Trump afterwards. Trump sort of, you know, is using Romney at this point, and that's okay. And I'm skeptical. I doubt that Romney ends up getting the pick. But it's good for Trump right now to be seen engaging in this. I think probably the discussion today about I heard about Sarah Palin for a position in the administration.
Veterans Affairs.
So this is the point where, you know, you can float things and so if you're getting too much noise on one side, why are you picking Romney? Romney, no good. He said bad things about you. He doesn't want to make America great again. You do that, you can say, hey, Sarah Palin. Now, Donald Trump may end up picking neither Mitt Romney nor Sarah Palin, but he can cater to different constituencies by
I think he is going to pick Mitt Romney.
Why?
I just felt like that dinner last night, the posture of it, the publicness of it, it didn't seem to me like it was meant to humiliate Romney.
I took it the other way. This is the pool is invited in. Look at this. We're having a nice dinner. You know, it's all good. Everything's good here. We're all good. And then he'll pick Bob Corker.
I don't think so.
You think it's Romney?
Yep.
All right.
Want to bet something?
Yeah. I will bet you a steak.
Okay. How big a steak?
Whatever steak you want.
Okay, fine. I'll get one. What do you make of the carrier announcement out of Indiana?
Well, these are smart play. Ford did it first, and now Carrier's doing it, that you give the president something. Oh, thanks to you, we're doing this. It's 1,000 jobs. I mean, 1,000 jobs is... If it's your job, it's a lot, right? If you're one of the 1,000, it's a lot. In the overall economy, not that much, but it is a gift that you can give the incoming president. And remember, United Technologies, which owns Carrier, is a huge company, mm-hmm. with varied interests, including doing things like selling to the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
It's good business to suck up to the new guy. And if you give him a ready-made present with a bow on it and you say, El Presidente, because of you, we are able to say that this has happened. It gives Trump a good talking point. It gives him a success without doing anything, right? It's winning a battle without firing a shot. He can say Ford is keeping their plant in Kentucky. Carrier's keeping this unit in Indiana. It doesn't have much effect on the larger economy or the trajectory, but it's a good talking point, and it's a present that you can give him. And then what you're hoping, I assume, if you're Carrier, is that that satisfied by that and other things, that Trump doesn't start try to slap tariffs on things, that Trump doesn't try to punish companies that do business with the federal government that have overseas units, that that those things down. So you'd always rather you catch more flies with honey, give them something, even if it's small up front.
You know, it just drove Obama crazy.
I know. Of course.
Remember when they came up with jobs saved?
Yeah. Jobs created or saved.
Or saved.
Jobs created or saved, asterisks.
Which is like not... actually, this with Carrier, arguably, you can count how many were saved.
You can count how many were saved. But I have a little bit of, you know, we need to keep something in perspective. Where did the jobs go? Where did manufacturing jobs go?
Robots.
Yeah, 85%.
I know.
85% of manufacturing jobs lost in the United States did not go overseas. They were automated.
Yep.
And the trend toward automation is accelerating, not decelerating.
Did you see what happened, what McDonald's announced today? What
they announced?
So you know how they there's that big fight for 15.
Fight for 15,
okay,
y'all.
That's to get the minimum wage up to $15 an hour for workers, which is fine if it works for them. Whatever they want to do, McDonald's can do whatever, pay their workers whatever they want. But in the meantime, they are putting in place in a bunch of different places to try it out because the customers like it. Basically, iPads where you don't have to talk to a
person
to order your food.
So like that thing at the airport?
Yep.
Ugh.
Yep.
I hate that thing
at
the airport.
But you know what? You're not a young person eating at McDonald's all the time.
No, that's true.
Young people are very comfortable.
Oh, no, I'd take it at McDonald's. I would totally take it at McDonald's.
Well, that's what's happening.
Yeah,
you don't like it at the airport?
I don't like it at the airport because
it's disgusting how many people have touched it.
You weirdo. I don't care how many people have touched it. Germs are good. Builds up your immune system. The problem at the restaurant is you're ordering sometimes at the airport, you're ordering sometimes things that are like if I'm paying $28 for a piece of salmon.
You want it cooked the way you want.
I want to be able to interact with a human being. If I want less ice in my iced tea or whatever, for $50, I kind of would like to transact something that's reasonable. At McDonald's, press number one. Do you want a large size? I am from the part of the country where the Sheetz chain of gas stations reigns supreme, and
get a good Slim Jim there.
You don't get it. Well, obviously, you can get a Slim Jim there, but what you get are delicious hoagies and delicious deli sandwiches. We've been touchscreening
those things
for 15 years.
Yeah, but they have those
things
that are like,
years.
You know, the rotating meat.
Rotating
cooker.
Meat.
Yeah.
What is your rotating meat?
I'm so tired. A Slim Jim type thing.
Right.
And it's placed on a rotating meat thing. That what? Heats it up and keeps them cooking, and then they like.
Are you talking about the hot dogs on the?
Well, yeah, but it's not just hot dogs. They have like.
But it has
like
other stranger
Slim
Jims meats
and stuff,
yes.
Right?
No, but I'm telling you, Sheetz has excellent sandwiches, and we've ordered them on touchscreens for I know more than a decade, maybe 15 years. That's a great idea for fast food, and it will eliminate job after job after job, and so too will driverless cars and trucks, and so too will all sorts of the service fulfillment jobs are going to come in. That's happening no matter what.
Right.
That's because you just aren't going – the profit motive is too strong for companies.
You know a great book to read about that?
What's that?
And is called The Industries of the Future. It's by Alec Ross.
No, really?
And I highly recommend it for parents of young children like yourself because it helps you think about how do you – help make sure your children are set up for success in the jobs of the future. That for Arthur and Newman, you can't even conceive of the jobs that they'll do. Because things are going to change so fast.
Well, I mean, Arthur's going to be a professional baseball player.
I got it.
That's obvious. And Newman will either be a stevedore captain or associate justice of the Supreme Court. So,
okay.
Either way.
Wanted to ask you one last thing.
Yes.
Before we go to trivia. I'm wondering if you have given much thought yet to the pace of progress that the new president and the Congress will have, especially when it comes to Obamacare. It is only November. Obviously, you can't repeal Obamacare in an afternoon. But I feel like this is such a thorny issue. And when we talked about Obamacare replacement yesterday on the 5, it was clear that everybody needed a refresher on the policy. So, because we were talking over each other like, oh, wait.
I'll tell you what's going to happen.
Uh-huh.
And that is this. Paul Ryan has a plan for a budget reconciliation, used 51 votes in the Senate to put through an Obamacare repeal. Included in that is the rollback of $600 and some billion in taxes on upper income earners that was part of Obamacare. They're going to put that through. And now that the president will sign it, and they're going to do that. But you know what they're going to do? They're going to punt on the replacement. And they'll punt until 2018. And then in 2018, they'll say, gosh, guys, I don't know. It's an election year. I don't know if we want to get into this right now. Let's punt it again. One more again. So I think that they will repeal it, but they'll then keep the
It'll
guts
just
of
sunset.
They'll just keep the guts of it. It's sort of like the Bush tax cuts. They'll just keep. And then the way that Obama did implementation of Obamacare, you just keep shoving things you don't like down the road for a while. And so I think that it will be simpler because they will just do it in an unserious and slightly discreditable way.
Wow. Interesting.
I think. We have forgotten in Washington about making law. Mm-hmm. So we have a system that is turning out to be more parliamentary than separation of powers. The original concept for our government was that there would be two competing branches or two competing houses of the legislative branch and the executive branch jealously fighting one another for power and with regional faction overarching individual partisan issues. Well, that's not what we've ended up with. We've ended up with something where you can't get anything done unless you control it all, and all the tumblers have to click into place. So in 2008, the Democrats run the table. They get both houses of Congress with substantially larger majorities and a larger their guy had coattails.
And you know what? I'm going to make a prediction. I don't think that Chuck Schumer, the Senate minority leader, is as shrewd as Harry Reid. And I think he's a very good politician for New York, but won't necessarily be able to match the wits of Mitch McConnell.
Oh, match the wits of Mitch McConnell.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Chuck Schumer is going to not try to match wits with Mitch McConnell. He's going to try to match wits with Donald Trump.
Maybe, if he's smart.
I think he will. They've been friends. They've worked together. They have done business together. He's been a supporter.
Yesterday when he came out, or 2 days ago when he came out against Tom Price, the new HHS secretary nomination, I thought, oh, it's so old and tired.
Well, what would Harry Reid have said? He'd have just said he was also a racist. Like,
I think that what they could have said was something different. They're like, fine, we think he's terrible, but Donald Trump's never been known for his judgment. So fine, send him up. Let him get confirmed. We'll see him in the hearing room, and nothing will get done.
Well, yeah.
That's what I would have said.
I think Schumer is going to surprise people. I think that Schumer's well-suited for this moment. He's a pragmatist. The Democrats are...
They're not feeling very pragmatic, though.
Well, right now they're feeling horrified, and like they all feel like the guy in Raiders of the Lost Ark when they open up the Ark and he looks in it and his face melts. It's been a difficult season, and I think Schumer's probably, you know, Harry Reid had definitely outlived his usefulness in the Senate. I think Schumer will do a good job. We have forgotten in Washington what happens when the tumblers align and you start making a bunch of law. So there's going to be a bunch of stuff happen in this town between the beginning of the year, well, really in the starting in the lame duck session, but from the beginning of the year until about April. It's going to be a hot ticket, and people, as you say, need a refresher course on what's in Obamacare. Steve Mnuchin, the designee for Treasury Secretary, was talking about sweeping changes to the American system of taxation. Huge things like capping your deduction on your mortgage, and things like that. big changes, systemic stuff. We are getting ready to go from a Congress that, by the will of the electorate, existed substantially to obstruct President Obama, to a Congress that starts doing a lot of stuff all at once. And it's going to be some spicy sauce.
It is going to be a fun time.
It's going to be something.
I'm just trying to embrace the chaos.
Just go with it.
That's my new thing. Yeah. Are you ready for your trivia?
All right, hit me.
All right, I got two questions.
Hit me.
Who are the only two presidents to be sworn into office by a former president?
Who are the only two presidents to be sworn into office by a former president? So there's a Taft. There's got to be a Taft thing here for swearing in Coolidge. No, Coolidge was sworn in by his father, a judge. I'm going to go with Herbert Hoover.
There were two presidents, though.
But is
you just named both of them.
Oh, I got them both?
Yeah.
I got Coolidge and Hoover?
Well, you didn't really say Coolidge, but I'm giving you a...
Oh, because on the, when he got elected... Ah, okay. Ding, 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 ding.
So the second question is, Coolidge took office after the death of Warren G. Harding.
Gamaliel administered
the oath to Coolidge following Harding's
his
death?
His father, who was a former judge in Vermont.
A notary public.
A notary. Well, okay.
Isn't it annoying when you find out you have to go find a notary?
The fact that that's still a thing.
It is still a thing.
And why can't we just have like a retinal scan?
I'm for that. I'm sure for the robots.
I'm sure you are.
I mean, but it is interesting. This whole issue about the future of work in the country, in the world.
And you better be ready to do something a robot can't do.
Like what?
Cut hair.
Think.
Think.
Well, they're going to be able to start thinking.
Right, but cut hair, that's something that a robot can't do. seriously.
No, I know, but don't you have higher aspirations than that?
What's wrong with cutting hair?
There's nothing wrong with it, but you can't have that many. There's not that many people can do hair cutting jobs.
That is true, like, but I'm just saying, the value of those jobs.
How do you know a robot couldn't cut hair?
Would you trust a robot to cut your hair? Can I tell you one
story? Probably.
Can I tell you one story before you kick me off?
Sure.
So a buddy of mine in West Virginia, you know what a Flobee is? Flobee is a razor that you hook up to your vacuum cleaner
and you cut your hair
with it, and it sucks the hair right down into the vacuum.
Oh, that's a good invention.
It's a good invention. So that's the Flobee.
Okay.
And a buddy of mine didn't have a Flobee. And so he'd cut his own hair with a wall clipper. And one day his neighbor came to his wife. This is actually true. His neighbor came to his wife and he said, would you ask Tom to quit cutting his hair on the back porch? And she said, well, I think he does it out there so he doesn't get hair all over the inside of the house. And she said, that's not the problem. It's that he does it in his underwear.
Oh, where is he now?
He's still in West Virginia, and he is a great guy, and I assume that he took pride in the fact, and he probably still goes out there in his BVDs and cuts his hair.
Oh, by the way, Alec Ross, the author of that book I mentioned, guess where he's from?
Underwear?
Where? West Virginia.
Really?
Yep.
Well, now I want to read it.
Yep.
Okay. You know how to get me.
He's a big Obama Clinton guy, just so you know.
Okay.
But it's not a political book.
I like them all.
In any way. All right. Well, this was fun.
Amen.
All right. I'll see you later today. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen. And don't forget, please leave us a review. That helps us figure out what you think. This has been Perino and Starwalt. I'll tell you what on Fox News Radio.